WHUR, keeping you informed and connected to the important issues and discussions taking place this week at the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation's annual legislative conference. We go live now to Harold Fisher for a special CBC edition of the Daily Drum.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us for this special edition of the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 and HBCU Channel 142. We are broadcasting live from the CBC's Brain Trust Tech and Telecom Association's Salute to Diverse Innovation in downtown D.C. Now, tonight, we're taking a look at the role of historically black colleges and universities and how to elevate a national platform for HBCUs. Over the next hour, we will talk with members of Congress, school leaders, business and industry experts, students, and more. We will not be taking any phone calls this evening, but we invite you to join the discussion during using the hashtag that we are using for this special event. It is hashtag HBCU Brain Trust 19. That's hashtag HBCU Brain Trust 19. Let's introduce you to our first guest. We have Rhonda Fox, Chief of Staff for North Carolina Congresswoman Alma Adams, and Kelly Williams, Vice President of Engineering and Technology Policy with the National Association of Broadcasters. Thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it. I want to first ask, there's a big focus on HBCUs right now. Why is this such a big issue for the CBC, Rhonda?
It's estimated that roughly 50% of all black professionals in America's workforce attended an HBCU at some time. Apart from that, these institutions contribute over $15 billion to our national economy. HBCUs matter. They have provided pathways of opportunity for millions of Americans. And when we talk about what's good for our bottom line, what's good for the American workforce, HBCUs are good for America's workforce. And that's why they matter.
Well said. What role, Kelly, does the NAB play when it comes to HBCUs, and particularly as it relates to, for example, the graduates?
So we're very happy to support Amy. The NAB has its own apprenticeship program through our foundation that tries to attract females and minorities into broadcast engineering specifically. That's our industry. And what we would really like is to have more HBCUs participate in that program. One of our goals is to increase our visibility in HBCUs. So fundamentally, Howard, for example, is one of the few schools that has a radio, TV, film major and engineering. I am a product, now 40 years ago, of that sort of incidental marriage. So I'd really like to see that same sort of melding at other HBCUs. So through our program and through our support of Amy, we really want to hope to attract generally more black students into engineering and technology, and specifically into our broadcast business.
You know, one of the things, Rhonda, when we talk about the Black Caucus Brain Trust, what's the mission? Give me kind of an overview of that mission, particularly now. I mean, the name seems to me to say it all.
Yeah. So the HBCU Brain Trust brings together thought thinkers, both from government, thought thinkers within industry, and our HBCU leaders to really come together and think about how can we address the over 200 years of systemic inequity that has faced our HBCUs. So that's what we do at the Brain Trust. And each year that we host this event, this is our third annual Brain Trust, we highlight a specific area. And this year we're diving into the issue of the power and the potential of our black innovation. Because the members of the bipartisan HBCU caucus firmly believe that HBCUs are the incubator of diverse talent. And so this year, at this year's Brain Trust, we're not just asking the question of how can we employ HBCU students? How can we retain them within our workforce? But we're asking the question, how can we empower HBCU students to be the future employers? there was an article that came out in the Brookings Institution, and in 2018, they said that the next Mark Zuckerberg is at an HBCU. And so this year's Brain Trust is asking, what are we doing to mine that talent? And then that same year, Black Enterprise did an article, and they said that next Mark Zuckerberg is where? FAMU. And that's why FAMU is in the building today as we celebrate the power and the potential of Black innovation.
It's interesting. You talk about mining the talent. How do you mine that talent? How do you promote that? Same for both of you. Rhonda, your perspective, and Kelly, your perspective.
So, as it relates to us, when it comes to mining that talent, my boss, Congresswoman Adams, and Congressman Mark Walker, as well as the members of the caucus, in 2017, asked themselves that very question. And they said it's not going to be just government working by themselves or HBCU leaders working by themselves with their students. It would require a collective impact between government, industry, and HBCUs. And so they launched the HBCU Partnership Challenge. And today we welcome the 37th company to that Partnership Challenge at our luncheon at Microsoft. And those companies work with Congress and our HBCU leaders and our students. Every quarter we come together and we talk about we're building strategic and sustainable partnerships with HBCUs. And why that's important is a lot of times we see in industry and across the board, when you support an HBCU, you give $2 million. I'm going to give $3 million. That's great. But we need strategic, real investments where we're tracking the return on those investments, where we're actually cultivating the diverse talent on our schools and not just giving a Band-Aid contribution. But the Brain Trust and that partnership challenge gets to the heart of that. How do we have real, meaningful partnerships that invest in our students and our schools?
Same question for you, Kelly. What is the best strategy for mining great talent at HBCUs? I mean, obviously, at NAB, you've got a big microphone.
Sure. So, from my personal experience and also my professional experience, interestingly, you really got to reach back to about 7th and 8th grade. And you've got to let minorities, young men and women see themselves. When I was, I first went to college, University of Virginia, as a member of an organization, became the National Society of Black Engineers. And we went around to rural schools in 7th and 8th grade and said, here's an engineer. Look, they look like you. Then getting the STEM education in high school, and then going out into an HBCU once they get to college and showing them what the career options are. There are a lot of options that are not just the typical tech business. Maybe you don't want to be a software engineer. That's not your gift. Maybe your gift is working with your hands, and you might want to be a mechanical engineer. So it's really exposing students and then getting companies to take a little extra effort and give not just money but time to send engineers into HBCUs and say, look, here's what I am, here's what I do, here's what you can do.
Mm-hmm. And see, that's the thing. Even at this event today, there has been so much emphasis on tech careers.
Yes.
And the like. How do we spread that around a little bit, Rhonda, beyond the obvious future high-tech job?
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you asked that question, because in July, the Bipartisan HBCU Caucus hosted its annual Diversity in Tech Summit. And the really cool thing about that Diversity in Tech Summit is that we take all of these companies who say they want to forge relationships with our HBCUs, we take them to our HBCUs. And you will find that a lot of these companies that say they're looking for diverse talent haven't been to an HBCU.
There you
so
go.
That's why that's a crux of our HBCU Partnership Challenge, as well as what the caucus aims to do by it. But what we saw at that Diversity in Tech Summit is that our deans of STEM curricula were saying it's time to invest in all of our schools. It's time to invest in all 102 institutions, because tech companies, they've got marketing. They've got communications. They've got tons of professions. Why do you just go to our campuses for our engineers, but you don't come for our accountants, you don't come for our communications professionals? So we bought that up at Diversity in Tech. And a lot of our companies like Microsoft, Intel, they said we want to. We're going there. So we have to ask the question.
There you go. Well, I want to thank both of you for joining this conversation, Kelly Williams and Rhonda Fox. I really appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break, but first, earlier this week, we had a chance to sit down and talk with the president of Howard University, Dr. Wayne Frederick, and we asked him about the excellence of HBCUs in maintaining that greatness.
HBCUs are responsible for being the top 10 institutions over the course of the past 15, 20 years that send African Americans from their undergrad campuses to STEM PhD programs. If you look in areas of business, of law, of medicine, they continue to be very significant producers of African American graduates as well. And so as a result, the production of these highly educated African Americans is in and of itself their excellence.
Yonet.com. It's a special CBC edition of the Daily Drum. We go live now to downtown D.C. with Harold Fisher and members of the Congressional Black Caucus.
Welcome back. We continue our conversation this evening on HBCUs and the fuel that drives their mission. You can also listen on Sirius XM Channel 141 and HBCU Channel 142. Now, 4 years ago, North Carolina Congresswoman Alma Adams founded the bipartisan HBCU Caucus to help promote and protect the interest of HBCUs. Over the next several days, Congresswoman Adams will host the third annual National HBCU Brain Trust during the CBC Foundation's annual legislative conference. Joining me to talk about the importance of this gathering of members of Congress, HBCU leaders, and others are North Carolina Democratic Congresswoman Alma Adams. She's also the founder of the HBCU Partisan Caucus, and North Carolina Republican Congressman Mark Walker. He is the vice chair of the HBCU Bipartisan Caucus. Thank you both for coming in and talking to us. President Trump spoke about HBCUs yesterday. Does this move the needle for you, Congresswoman Adams?
Well, I certainly want it to. We can't just talk the talk. We got to walk it too. We have legislation right now to renew or recertify the support for HBCUs, particularly as it relates to the ongoing funding that will expire September 30th. And I want to put that out there because I want my colleague here, Mark Walker, and all the others to help us get that funding, because it's about $255 million and our schools need it. There is Title III funding in there, STEM funding, and so forth. So I'd say the president has done some things, but we can all do more. He's the leader of the country, and I think if he put his foot forward just a little bit more, we'll be able to do that. So we are excited about the bipartisan caucus and the fact that it is bipartisan. We are 94 members strong right now. We are bicameral, so not just in the House, but in the Senate as well. I have enjoyed the opportunity to serve in this capacity because of what an HBCU did for me. North Carolina A&T State University took me in, poor black girl growing up in the ghetto of New Jersey, came there. They saw something in me and made that investment and helped me to become all that I could. And I went on to do my PhD at the Ohio State University, only because of the North Carolina A&T and HBCU.
Yes.
That's exactly right. So we're working here in the Congress. I mean, our schools add so much value to our communities. We're talking about 47% of African Americans who get degrees, get them from HBCUs, large percentages of STEM graduates. Come from our HBCUs. So we're not slighting anything. We've done a lot with a little. Many of our schools are over 100 years old. Nine of them celebrated 150 years. So, you know, we are HBCU strong with all of the schools across this country. And for me, it runs in my veins. I taught 40 years on the campus of Bennett College in Greensboro.
Okay.
So, listen, that's all I know, not only what they did for me, but what I've tried to do for young people and taking that initiative onto Congress. So I'm just glad to be here.
And I want to ask Congressman Walker about the GOP commitment to the cause and also how you personally got involved.
Yeah, thank you for the question there. I was a pastor for 16 years, had an opportunity to work in the different communities. And when I arrived to Congress, even as a Republican, I knew how to spell HBCU before I ever got here. And the reason that it's personal for me is my wife is a two-time graduate of an HBCU, Winston-Salem State University.
Oh,
she'd
wow,
be upset
okay.
if I didn't give a Ram shout-out. But I get to represent the great North Carolina A&T Aggies. I saw Chancellor Martin here a little bit earlier. So what I did, even before I had a leadership opportunity, is we planned an event where we brought over 80 chancellors from HBCUs throughout the country. And I said, as a Republican, you tell us what it is that you need. One of the things that we were able to discover out of that was year-round Pell Grants. Within 6 months, we actually had that in law for all HBCUs. I was able to help lead increased funding 14% across the board. And then I thought I was doing something really, really good. So I'm going to be the HBCU guy. But then I realized that the lady that came in with me was kind of the godmother of HBCUs. It was kind of like singing a natural woman after Aretha Franklin or something. But it was wonderful. So what we did is we said, listen, a lot of these students from HBCU schools do not have the opportunity to come to Washington, D.C. So we worked together to have a paid internship for young students that were coming out that would be exposed to some of the workings in the Republicans' office and the Democrats' office. And that thing, we are so proud of it. It has worked incredibly, and we're glad to be part of the HBCU family.
I want to thank both of you for sharing your enthusiasm for this really, really important cause, Congresswoman Adams, as well as Congressman Walker. And I hope this partnership between the two of you continues, because, as you said, we really, really need it. We need to take another break. And when we come back, we will speak with several HBCU presidents. But first, we hear again from Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick. We've asked Dr. Frederick about how HBCUs can engage more business support.
I think we get businesses and alum and others, other friends to invest is by making sure that everybody understands our case of excellence. I think we have to popularize our narrative around what we do, how well we do it, and the impact that it has on the broader society. And I think if we're successful in doing that, as well as consistent in spreading that message, I think we will certainly attract the type of investment.
The important issues, the must-have conversations. WHUR has it all covered for CBC Foundation Week. Let's go back now to Harold Fisher for a special edition of the Daily Drum.
Welcome back. Historically black colleges and universities, their challenges, their triumphs, and taking their interests to a larger audience, the bipartisan HBCU caucus has been pushing that agenda now for just over 4 years. So how's it going? What do the HBCU leaders think about the movement? Well, joining me now for part of that discussion are Dr. Harold L. Martin, Senior Chancellor at North Carolina A&T University, and Dr. Lily McNair, President of Tuskegee University. Now, we are 4 years in. Dr. McNair, talk to me about how this has benefited HBCU.
The Brain Trust is so incredibly important. This bipartisan alliance shows America that we believe in the value of HBCUs. Throughout the history of America, not only in terms of what we produce now, in terms of the diversity of our nation's STEM workforce and other important areas where HBCUs educate more than half of all college graduates, for example, yet only represent 3% of all universities. But it's important that America know what we need to do to support HBCUs, because we've been underserved. And Congresswoman Allman's efforts in this bipartisan effort has really raised awareness and will hopefully raise funding for HBCUs.
Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting point about, you know, raising awareness. I would argue that over the past year or so, Dr. Martin, we've seen a lot of pop culture raising awareness about HBCUs. We've had black billionaire Robert Smith, wiping out those loans of those Morehouse graduates, class of 2019, Beyoncé's Coachella.
Yes,
it was just like homecoming.
Yes.
At her concert, and even in Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority raising $1 million for the second year in a row for HBCUs. How has that injection of pop culture and news about HBCUs helped the bottom line for you?
When you think about where jobs are in America and the world, global jobs are being driven in very substantial ways in almost every segment of our lives. Entertainment, technology, where we eat foods, produce foods, transportation systems, derives from technology and growing demands for highly prepared STEM graduates. HBCUs have been producing STEM graduates for many, many years, and levels of incredible success. But the bipartisan focus has raised high levels of visibility and bringing to the forefront in the minds of parents and very, very bright children, the incredible work we've been doing for decades. Quite honestly, and many of these bright students are recognizing in their families what an incredible opportunity for a high-quality education experience at one of our historical black colleges and universities. That's driving enrollment, that's driving interest, and that's driving corporate investments and support of our institutions, which are vital to our universities continue to add value and quality in preparation of the nation's great demands for talent, technical talent, and especially diverse technical talent. So it creates a tremendous opportunity for our universities.
But you know, it's interesting because over the past 30 years, we have seen some HBCUs do exceptionally well. Mm-hmm. Others not so much. There are challenges. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit, Dr. McNair, about some of the challenges at Tuskegee.
For us, the challenges revolve around gaining increased interest in coming to a very rural setting. Mm. There are some students who love the rural setting.
And for others, it's culture shock.
Right, who do not want to be in a major city. And yet for others, it's kind of like, So gaining, increasing that is very, very important because we need to keep enrollment up. We have a huge legacy at Tuskegee. We have students whose families, whose parents, grandparents have been there, have uncles and aunts and so on, and they'll go no other place. But it's always important for us to raise interest in Tuskegee University.
Mm-hmm. Same for you. When you talk, Dr. Martin, about some of the challenges, and I've got about a minute or so left, what is the thing that concerns you most as you try to take A&T forward?
As we continue to enroll incredibly bright students at our university and our College of Engineering, quite honestly, in our STEM areas in general, the big challenge, in many ways the biggest challenge for all of our universities, is the pipeline. If we don't do a better job of working more closely with the K-12 school districts in our region, to do a better job of preparing bright young African-American students, minority students in general, with strong interest in math and science, we're not going to be able to continue to expand the production of well-prepared College of Engineering graduates from our university. So a big challenge in my mind really focuses in that pipeline. It's a leaky pipeline, quite honestly. We've got to produce more and better minority math and science teachers who also engage with these children in K-12, who help us navigate more and more of them toward giving strong interest in loving math and science.
That's right.
I remind students on a regular basis, I'm a geek. I love being a geek. I love math and
science. That's right.
And we got to produce more geeks.
Well, geeks
that's
rule the world.
That's right. And related to that, Chancellor Martin, is scholarship access.
Yeah.
We always are concerned about ensuring that our students have the financial means to complete.
Absolutely, yeah. And we hope that we will continue to support those children. I say children, students.
The young people, absolutely.
So thank you so much. Okay. I really appreciate you participating in this conversation, Dr. Harold Martin and Dr. Lily McNair. We're going to take another break, but we will continue this conversation in just a moment. We're going to say goodbye to our WHUR audience. Next, for my WHUR listeners, Jeff Brown and the original Quiet Storm. The spotlight is on HBCUs at the CBC this week. The conversation continues on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141, and on HBCU, Sirius XM Channel 142 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome to the Orphan Diaries. Here's the founder of Food for Orphans, Gary Van Dyke.
Ken doesn't know how old he is. He guesses at around 7. His whole life has been centered on finding food. You see, he lives at the dump and he's never been anywhere else. You can find Ken walking in a decaying landfill of rotting garbage, plastic bags, and shards of broken glass. To many, Ken and children like him are invisible. But they're not, are they?
For more information, visit www.foodfororphans.org.
Welcome back to a special CBC edition of the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141, and HBCU, Sirius XM Channel 142. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, we've heard from members of Congress, presidents of HBCUs, and now we're going to speak to the great minds that have been formed and shaped by these institutions. Our guests have made the important decision to take their educational journey to the campuses of historically black colleges and universities. With me, I have Tony Watlington from North Carolina A&T. He's a senior. Olumide Longe from Prairie View A&M University. He's the founder of Blademy, an online education and employment platform for black millennials. And Lo Tony, a graduate of Hampton University and founder of Plexo Capital, a venture capital firm. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining the conversation. I want to talk, first of all, about how did your HBCU education prepare you for your success? Olumide, talk to me about that first.
I've been at PV for about 2 years now, and I would say the opportunity has been amazing. When I came in, I met with a good number of folks. People were always out there, always on top of it, and just being able to be put in front of companies by my school. We had great career fairs. I've participated in a good number of diversity programs. So being able to get an opportunity to be put forward to employers, to investors, entrepreneurs, it has in fact affected my education in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for Lo, you've been out of school for a minute.
Just a minute.
Yeah. But when you look back at your experience at your HBCU, how were you prepared for the success that you are now enjoying?
I think two ways. Number one, there was always a sense that we had to work hard, and that hard work led to an understanding of what it was going to be like going to a large corporation where it wasn't going to look like the composition of the students at Hampton University. Number two, I have a network now of people that have gone on to success in a myriad of industries in different geographies and different functional roles that I'm still able to tap into to this day. So the combination of those two, the preparation of understanding how hard I was going to have to work, plus having the network that I can tap into, I'm still leveraging that to this day.
Mm-hmm. So, Tony, why did you go to North Carolina A&T? What was the thing that influenced your decision as opposed to perhaps going to a white school?
Absolutely. Well, I'm a second-generation Aggie. And being a second-generation Aggie, I understand the importance of being in an environment where not only people that look like you, but they're really there to support you at the end of the day. At North Carolina A&T, I've had opportunities to not only experience things here on Capitol Hill, but also get some great corporate experience as well. So I think we have to understand that HBCUs are breeding grounds for black innovation.
Mm-hmm. And the same question for both of you. You know, Olumide, why did you decide to go to an HBCU instead of some other school?
I'll be honest with you. The reason I decided to go to an HBCU is because I wanted to be considered equally for every opportunity that was put in front of me. I wanted an opportunity to go and do my best work, and I'll be rewarded equally for my best work. That's why I went to HBCU.
Mm-hmm. Same for you, Logan.
Yeah, so for me, I went to a school that was a prep school in Oakland, and most of my classmates went to Stanford, University of California, Ivy League schools, and elite or liberal arts colleges. But for the African Americans, you know, there was a trend, and we all went to Hampton, Howard, Morehouse, Spelman. We were excited to be able to continue our journey and experience around people that look like us. And I think most of us knew, and most of us went on to graduate school. And I think we all had this sense that we were likely going to go to graduate school, and we were likely going to go to a majority graduate school. So why not get that experience around being at an HBCU first?
Now, but here's my question, because okay, I'm second generation. My daughter's at Howard, okay, through three generations. You know, Tony, you're second generation, but you were in California.
I was. My grandmother went to Prairie View A&M.
Okay, so that's where you got the HBCU.
That's where I
Foundation.
First learned about HBCUs. But like I said, like all of the folks that were a couple of classes ahead of us, those were my people that I looked up to in high school, and they were all going to. They weren't talking about going to Harvard, you know, Cal, Stanford. They said that's where we're going to go to grad school. When we go undergrad, we're going to Morehouse, Spelman, Howard, Hampton, and so that's where I was inspired.
So it was already baked in for you.
Already baked.
So, Tony, you're a senior.
Yes, sir.
What are your plans once you walk across that stage?
So after A&T, looking at going to law school next, and I think people have to understand that HBCUs prepare you for professional schools. In my experience, not only interning on the Hill in different congressional offices, has prepared me to really step into the world and compete.
And, Olu, what is your message for HBCU students?
My message would be to never give up and always, always, always chase your dreams.
And my message to HBCU students will be to stay aware of the changes that are coming. The future of work, we hear about that all the time, is coming faster than us. Things are moving at a very fast pace. Stay on top of it. Stay as informed as you can be. That's my advice to HBCU students.
But what do you tell them about competition? Because not only are they competing against some of the best black minds,
yes,
when you go to HBCUs, but you're also competing with others.
Yeah.
How do you deal with the grind,
yes,
of that very, very intense competition,
yes,
in this early 21st century?
Yes. I would say for me, the way I've always dealt with competition is being the person that's willing to share, regardless of the position. I don't care if you're competing with me. I'm willing to share my knowledge with you. I believe that the more you share with people, even if you're competing, the more you rise to the top. Because guess what? The more you share, the more people refer people to you, and the more referrals you get. Mm-hmm. So that's how you stay competitive.
I think that we will find the next male or female Mark Zuckerberg at an HBCU that will build a billion-dollar company. I mean, when you look at the trends, HBCUs already are producing north of 40% of all the engineering students. And as we become a majority-minority country, the insights that I believe happen organically at HBCUs, the fact that when you look at some of the most prolific users of consumer technology, it's African Americans, so we have this innate understanding. You couple that with the ability to be able to be around your peers, I am bullish that as a venture capitalist, the next Mark Zuckerberg, male or female, will come out of an HBCU. And I want people to strive to make that billion-dollar company so I can come invest in it and make a lot of money.
Well, there you go. I think that's a great way to end this segment. And certainly we do hope that things remain bullish as it relates to the market. I want to thank all of you, Tony, Olu, Lo. Thank you so much for participating in this really important conversation. We are out of time for this particular segment. And when we come back, we're going to hear from business, government, and nonprofit leaders. We'll talk about how HBCUs power corporate diversity and inclusion. But first, we hear more from Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick. We ask him what's the best kept secret about historically black colleges and universities.
One of the things about HBCUs is that you can describe it, and I've heard people describe it as the family atmosphere. They describe it as nurturing. They describe it as an environment that allows for self-actualization. I think it's a little bit of all of that. However, I think one of the secrets is that it's not a monolithic secret. It's not a monolithic source. I think it's a multidimensional source with many spices. And I think if you go across the country to all the different HBCUs, you recognize that they're different pots with different types of ingredients. They all produce a very, very great meal that we all should have an opportunity at some point in our lifetimes to eat from.
Thank you for staying with us for this special CBC edition of the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, and HBCU Channel 142. I'm Harold Fisher. On this segment, we turn the conversation to why HBCUs matter to industry, government, and nonprofits, and how they fuel corporate diversity and inclusion. My guests are Gigi Dixon, Senior Director of External Relations for Wells Fargo, Steve Newman, Director of Government Affairs for American Airlines, and Dr. Stephanie Rodriguez, Vice President of Policy and Engagement for AnitaB.org, a company that helps women succeed in the tech world. Thank you all for coming. I appreciate it. I want to talk, first of all, about the impact of HBCUs on your individual organizations. Gigi, talk to me about your experience with HBCUs.
Thanks, Harold. It's really exciting to be here, and I would tell you that at Wells Fargo, we have a long-standing relationship with Thurgood Marshall College Fund and United Negro College Fund, UNCF. We provide scholarships to over about 3,000 students in the past 4 years, and it's about $1 million a year to each one of the funds that provide scholarships and program support. So HBCUs are very important to us. We think it's important for the HBCUs to have the advocacy organizations, the scholarship funds that provide government relations and they provide programs for the students, and really lean into the leadership development that prepares them to come and work for companies like Wells Fargo. The HBCU is a very intimate environment that's very important for higher education, and we fully support and invest in HBCUs through those scholarship funds, the programs, and then our outreach in our local markets across the United States where HBCUs are located.
You know, one of the things, Steve, everyone knows about American Airlines. That's not news. But tell me some of the news as it relates to the interaction that the company has with HBCUs, whether it is in recruitment or other kinds of involvement.
Well, thank you very much, and obviously grateful for the chance to be here. You know, American Airlines has 130,000 team members. American Airlines Group has 130,000 team members around the world. And so making sure that we have the opportunity to recruit the next generation of excellent, diverse talent really means a lot to us. And so HBCUs, of course, play a really important role in that. Right at the moment, the airline is working with the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, which is a consortium of over 40 publicly funded HBCUs, to source top talent from HBCUs around the country. It's just one of the many ways in which we're trying to be engaged with historically black colleges, universities, and look for a way to grow our diverse workforce and make sure that we're able to serve our nearly 600,000 passengers that we fly every day.
Dr. Rodriguez, as one of the high-ranking officials in your company that is working with women in the tech world, there's been a lot of conversation this evening about tech jobs. Talk to me about AnitaB and drill down a little bit as far as what you're doing.
Absolutely. Thank you. At AnitaB.org, we implement a variety of programs and strategies to reach gender equity in the tech industry. Our founder, Anita Borg, set the audacious vision of 50-50 gender equity by 2020. And if you look at the numbers, the sad reality is that we're not going to get there. So our new CEO, Brenda Darden Wilkerson, has set the audacious goal of 50-50 by 2025. And the reality is that you cannot reach 50-50 equity in technology if you are not intentionally including black and brown women in these efforts. And so AnitaB.org is buckling down and recommitting our energies to make sure that all of our programs, all of our efforts are intentionally addressing the needs and the lived experiences of women of color. And our goal is that none of our 97 and growing corporate partners can ever say we can't find that talent, because that talent is there. It is grown at HBCUs, and we want to ensure that we are a conduit to access that talent.
Gigi, is that an issue?
Absolutely. I think that it is. I think a lack of equity is always an issue, and at Wells Fargo, we are always seeking ways to build on the access to equity. Equity for women, equity for people of color, equity for all people. One of our major pillars going forward with our foundation, quite frankly, is making investments in programs and organizations that would help us figure out how to level the playing field. So equity is very important.
Same question, Steve. I've got about a minute. Your thoughts on making sure that American Airlines remains a more diverse company.
Well, I think Dr. Rodriguez is exactly right, that companies have to be intentional about it, and that's certainly the work that we're doing at American. For the fourth year in a row, for example, we're going to be sponsoring the Black Enterprise Tech Connect Hackathon, where students from more than a dozen HBCUs are going to be flown into Austin, Texas for a weekend of not only a hackathon, but informative workshops, coaching, and career advice. And, of course, team members from American will be there to serve as judge and mentors. And that's important not only to get the exposure to that hacking experience, but also to be able to connect with those leaders at American Airlines so that we can recruit and bring those future leaders into our company. And so we're trying to be intentional, just as the doctor said.
Well, I want to thank all of you for coming in, Gigi, Steve, and Dr. Rodriguez. I really appreciate you coming in to talk to us about this very important issue. Great information this evening on how to further drive the excellence of HBCUs. Industry leaders indeed play a vital role in that mission. We're going to take another break, but when we come back, some closing thoughts and details of the third annual National HBCU Brain Trust, hosted during the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation's annual legislative conference. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Daily Drum, a special CBC edition. We are live for the Brain Trust Tech and Telecom Association salute to diverse innovation. Now, tomorrow, the third annual National HBCU Brain Trust will be held at the Washington Convention Center to celebrate the power and potential of black innovation. Joining me now with the final details and why you need to be part of this event, of course, Rhonda Fox, Chief of Staff for North Carolina Congresswoman Alma Adams, and Congressman Bobby Scott, Democrat from Virginia. Rhonda, give me a rundown of what we can expect over the next few days.
Yeah, so for the next 3 days, we are truly highlighting the power and the potential of diverse innovation. The highlight of this year's Brain Trust is that we are welcoming our inaugural HBCU Brain Trust student cohort. So we have 35 students from all across the country that are flying in to connect to opportunity. Tomorrow we'll be over at the Washington, D.C. Convention Center from 10:30 to 1 p.m. It's open to the public. We've got free food. We've got breakfast. We've got lunch. But most importantly, we've got the Bowie Drumline coming to perform as we listen to our HBCU presidents and our industry leaders. So it is our Washington, D.C. HBCU homecoming.
Absolutely. Now, Congressman Scott, talk to me a little bit about your perspective as it relates to what's happening on the Hill and the future of HBCU support in this country.
Well, I think the future of HBCUs is bright. We're investing a lot of money in HBCUs and making sure that all students can go to college. This year, we're going to reauthorize the Higher Education Act. I chair the Education and Labor Committee, and we're looking at three aspects: affordability, access and affordability, completion, and accountability, making sure schools provide a quality product so when people spend all this money, they actually receive a decent education. We're doing well increasing Pell Grants, reducing the reliance on student loans will be the goals of the reauthorization. We're in talks now with Democrats and Republicans, House and Senate. I don't know how far we're going to be able to go, but we need to significantly increase Pell Grants to reduce the reliance on student loans. We need to reduce the interest on student loans. Right now, the interest is high enough for the federal government to actually make a profit on the student loan program. It ought to be subsidized, not a profit center. Then we need to have a reasonable repayment plans where you can pay a percentage of your income and get discharged. We need to improve that plan, and we need to make major changes on the public service loan forgiveness program. Right now, if you spend 10 years in a public service type of job, you're promised to get a total discharge of all the loans after that. You're totally discharged. The Department of Education has just mismanaged that to the point where 99% of the people are being denied. We passed emergency legislation to improve it and told them to fix it within 60 days. That was last year. It hadn't been fixed since. And we're going to have a hearing to make sure they get this thing straight, because many people are relying on that discharge. And it is a way for people to go to college and not worry about how much the debt is, because after 10 years of payments, they'll be discharged. And so better repayment plans, but basically to make sure that young people can go to college without mortgaging their future. Mm-hmm. Higher education is certainly a major step up. That you're where you're going to end up in society to a large extent will depend on the education that you get. So we have to make sure that you can be the best you can be. And 30, 40 years ago, if you can get into any college, you could go. Pell Grants covered 75%. Now it's 25%. And so we need to make sure the Pell Grant covers a much higher portion of the expense so that young people can actually go to college.
You know, Rhonda, you were here earlier, and you had a lot of great points to make, but and I want you to have the last word, but drill down a little bit. For those people who do not know about HBCUs, from your perspective, what is it that you want them to know? What do they need to understand?
HBCUs are the power of our past, and they are the potential of our future. I didn't go to an HBCU. I didn't know anything about HBCUs until I started working for that woman right over there, Alma Adams. And I learned the richness of these institutions. They take students who others might not take, and they invest in them. They take them, and they train them, and they lift them up. They give them the tools. Today, 40% of our Congressional Black Caucus, to include my boss, is a graduate of an HBCU. 50% of our black professionals are the graduates of an HBCU. Who are we if we're not investing in our HBCUs and creating pathways of opportunity for our students? Congressman Bobby Scott, as the leader on House Education and the Workforce, is paving the way for the federal government to truly dig deep to level the playing field for these schools. Congresswoman Adams designed and implemented the HBCU Partnership Challenge to bring industry in to do that. We've got to value these schools, level the playing field, and ensure every one of our students can go where they want to go.
I think that's a great way to end this conversation. I want to thank you, Rhonda Fox, and, of course, Congressman Bobby Scott for helping us wrap up today's conversation. I also want to thank all of my guests this evening for joining us for this special CBC edition of the Daily Drum. And, of course, if you missed any of the information about the location and times of the Brain Trust tomorrow and Thursday, all of the details will be listed on WHUR.com this evening. That is it for this edition of the Daily Drum for Wednesday, September 11th, 2019. I'm Harold Fisher. I want to thank you again for joining us on Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, and HBCU Channel 142. Good night.